This episode is based on a chapter from Laws of Life, Book 2. Now, Build the System for Your Life by Jack Spurko. Chapter 7, Be the Pig, Not the Cow.
Right.
So, I want you to imagine a wild boar just calculating, dangerous, and, you know, entirely free.
Yeah, a total force of nature.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now, imagine a cow just staring blankly at a painted line on the ground, terrified to cross it, even though there isn't any actual fence there.
Right. It's all in the cow's head.
Exactly. So today we are doing a deep dive into the blueprints of why the modern corporate world is basically designed to turn you into that cow, and exactly how you can escape by choosing to be the pig.
It's just a masterclass in breaking out of societal complacency. I mean, my background is in regenerative agriculture and, you know, mentoring small business owners. So I spent a lot of time observing literal livestock systems.
Which is why you are the perfect person to break this down with.
Well, I appreciate that. But when you read this text, you realize the mechanics we use to keep animals in a pasture, they are mirrored almost perfectly in how human society manages its population.
And that is incredibly relevant to my work as a lifestyle design strategist.
Right.
I mean, every single day I talk to people who are just trapped in conventional career captivity.
The daily grind, right?
Yeah, the commute, the mortgage, the acceptable path.
Yeah.
But they feel this, I don't know, this deep nagging sensation that they're fenced in.
Because they are.
Right. They want intentional freedom, but they just cannot see the wires keeping them contained. So our mission for this deep dive is to map out that artificial pasture for you, the listener, and give you the actual tools to break out.
Yeah. The core law we're mining today is it's a hard truth. The system actively tries to domesticate you into comfortable, compliant captivity.
Yep.
If you want freedom, you really have to act like the pig. You know, testing the wire, finding weak points, and escaping in layers.
So let's start with the literal pasture.
Mm.
Because to understand the human system, we need to understand how ranching works. Let's look at the cow.
Right. So in modern agriculture, we use what's called rotational grazing. A rancher will string up an electrified wire to hold cattle in a specific paddock.
Okay.
And the cow bumps into the wire, takes a shock or two, and basically learns a deep ingrained fear of that boundary.
And the author notes that this fear becomes so absolute that eventually the rancher doesn't even need to keep the electricity on.
Oh, exactly. The psychological barrier completely overrides physical reality.
Which is wild to think about.
I mean,
a plain piece of twine or a dead wire is enough to keep this massive heavy animal contained.
Because the cow lives entirely in the now. It doesn't pregame. It doesn't, sit around analyzing the infrastructure.
Right. It just accepts the rule.
Yeah. And we use physical tricks to exploit that mindset. Think about a cattle guard.
Oh, yeah. The metal bars in the road.
Right. A grid of heavy steel pipes laid over a ditch at a gate. A cow steps on it, slips, feels unstable, and then they just never try to cross it again.
They just log it as a permanent barrier.
Exactly. Their conditioning is so complete that you can literally paint black lines on a flat concrete road to look like a cattle guard, and a cow will refuse to walk over it. Yeah, the boundary isn't physical anymore. It is entirely in the animal's mind. And if one does wander off, I mean, it doesn't take a complex operation to get them back. You just drive them toward the herd, and they go.
They just want to be with the group. But the text draws a really sharp line between the cow and the pig, because the pig is, well, it's a completely different operating system.
Oh, completely. To train a pig to respect an electric fence, you can't just string up a wire in an open field.
Right. They just walk right through it.
Yeah, they would. So you have to build a small 16 by 16 foot pen out of heavy steel hog panels, and then you run a high voltage wire on the inside.
To really make it sting.
Exactly. The pig will try to get out, and they get popped hard on the snout. Mm. It has to cause real pain for them to respect it.
Okay, so eventually they figure out the boundary, and you can move them to a larger pasture. But the author makes this critical distinction. Unlike the cow, a pig never actually abandons the idea of getting out.
Never. They are inherently calculating. I mean, weeks or months might pass without an incident.
They play the long game.
Yeah, they do. But one day, that pig will look at the wire and decide to test it. And if the grass has grown tall enough to ground out the fence, or if, say, the solar charger dies.
So that power goes out.
Right. The pig doesn't just wander out and graze nearby like a confused cow would. The pig executes a full-on calculated jailbreak. They head straight for the tree line.
Because they're omnivores, right. Much like us, they realize incredibly quickly that they do not need the rancher's feed to survive.
Exactly. And the numbers in the text back up how effective this survival instinct is.
Yeah, I was looking at this. There are an estimated 6 to 9 million feral pigs in the United States right now.
It's a massive issue.
With up to 4 million in Texas alone. And the craziest part is, when a pink domestic farm pig escapes, it doesn't stay a pink farm pig.
Right, they undergo a physical transformation.
Yeah, within one generation, their offspring revert to wild boars. They adapt to freedom instantly. And the text pairs this with a brilliant quote from Jack London about the patience of the wild.
Describing that, that dogged, tireless persistence that waits motionless for hours. Just like a spider in a web.
Exactly, just waiting for a weakness.
Huh.
Which is a striking contrast to the Friedrich Nietzsche quote placed right next to it.
Oh, yeah. Society tames the wolf into a dog, and man is the most domesticated animal of all.
Yeah. And let me jump in on that terminology for a second, because I think people use tame and domesticated interchangeably.
They do, all the time.
But the chapter emphasizes that confusing those two concepts is an arrogant and often dangerous human mistake.
Very dangerous, because domestication is baked into the DNA.
Right. Cows have been selectively bred over thousands of generations to be docile and compliant. They're truly domesticated. But a pig, or let's say a circus tiger raised from a cub, is only tamed.
Exactly. You might be able to feed them treats and give them belly rubs, but their wildness is entirely intact.
They are smart, assessing, and just waiting for the wire to short out.
So moving from the literal pasture to the human pasture, we see this exact ranching methodology applied to human beings right from childhood.
Oh, absolutely.
Consider the K-12 education system. It operates remarkably like that initial electric fence training we do with pigs.
Right, the conditioning. Oh. Children are conditioned to move from room to room based on a bell. They're trained to sit quietly, face the front, and endure punishment for non-compliance.
Yeah, and college and trade schools just extend that conditioning, teaching you how to climb the pecking order so you can, you know, earn a spot in a slightly richer, more comfortable paddock.
Which brings up that striking insight from the author's father. He said, "The real goal of those in control of the system is the full domestication of human beings."
The system wants compliance.
Right. But humans are highly intelligent omnivores.
Mm-hmm.
We are the pig, not the cow. If you just lock an intelligent animal in a bear cage, they literally lose their minds.
Yeah, and zookeepers have a term for solving this, right? Enrichment.
Enrichment, yeah.
If you have a captive tiger, you hide a piece of meat inside a heavy rubber tire. The tiger spends hours trying to get it out, and it basically prevents them from going insane out of sheer boredom.
It gives them a task. And the author makes a compelling and, frankly, uncomfortable comparison here. The argument is that many modern jobs are simply human enrichment.
Adult daycare.
Yeah, adult daycare designed to keep an intelligent population busy. It gives us the illusion of purpose and productivity. The text even draws a parallel to the movie The Matrix.
Suggesting that a large portion of the workforce acts as compliant batteries powering a system they don't even understand.
Exactly. And right now, you might be driving to your corporate job thinking, wait, are you telling me my career is just adult daycare?
It definitely stings to hear.
It does. But let's look at the raw math the author uses. He brings up the headcount reduction at Twitter, which is now X. And, you know, pulling back entirely from any political bias about Elon Musk or corporate management, the raw facts are just staggering.
Right. The company reduced its staff from roughly 7,500 employees down to about 1,500.
That is an 80% reduction. Yet the core product, the platform itself, continued to function. And the author uses this to suggest that at least 40%, if not significantly more, of conventional jobs across the economy could be eliminated without causing societal collapse.
Which is a heavy thought. But the author reminds us that facts do not have feelings. If you can eliminate that much of a workforce and the core service survives, it reveals a brutal truth about the nature of those roles.
Right, whether in tech or government bureaucracies or massive corporate conglomerates.
Those positions were largely make work. They were enrichment for the captive herd.
But see, that creates a massive logical paradox for me. Because if a company can function perfectly fine without 80% of its staff, why were those people hired in the first place? I mean, nobody just burns money for the fun of it.
Well, the author points to a fundamental shift in the plumbing of our economy to explain where the funding for this adult daycare actually comes from. He references a site called WTFHappenedIn1971.com.
1971 is the key here. That is the year Richard Nixon closed the gold window, completely detaching the U.S. dollar from physical gold.
Right. And the economy shifted entirely to running on debt and fiat credit.
So let's break down the mechanics of that. Because when money was tied to physical gold, a business or a government couldn't just borrow endless cheap cash to hire useless administrators.
The money supply was finite.
Exactly. But once we moved to a debt-based fiat system, credit became incredibly cheap to generate. And that massive flood of artificial money had to go somewhere.
Yeah, it flowed straight into the corporate and administrative levels, creating an absolute explosion of non-productive roles.
And the text highlights a terrifying graph to prove this. Since 1971, the number of actual doctors in the medical field, adjusted for population growth, has basically barely moved.
But the administrators...
Right. The number of medical administrators has skyrocketed by over 3,200%.
3,200%. That's insane. The cheap credit just funded a massive bureaucratic footprint.
Yeah. And at the exact same time, we saw the collapse of the single-income household. The text points out that in 1960, a blue-collar worker could support an entire family on one income.
Easily.
Today, single-income households represent only about 20% of the population. And many of those are either extremely wealthy or relying on government assistance.
The cost of living basically expanded to absorb both parents entering the workforce just to maintain the exact same standard of living.
Right. And the mechanism that locks this all in place, the actual electricity running through the wire, is lobbying and regulation.
Yeah, the chapter notes that roughly $4 billion a year is spent on federal lobbying.
$4 billion.
And in Texas alone, $130 million is spent lobbying the state legislature. Consequently, total regulations have grown by 325% over the last 50 years.
So let's look at how that regulatory capture actually functions. Because we're taught in civics class that regulations exist to protect the consumer, right? And we always hear big corporations complaining about government red tape.
Yeah, they love to complain publicly.
Exactly. So why would they spend billions lobbying for more rules? Well, it's like playing a high-stakes game of poker, but the massive corporations are allowed to bribe the dealer to raise the buy-in mid-hand.
That's a great analogy.
Right. If the government passes a sweeping, convoluted new compliance law, a giant conglomerate just hires 10 new corporate lawyers. They can afford the new blind.
But a small innovator cannot.
Exactly. A guy in a garage trying to build a competing product simply cannot afford the compliance costs. The regulation bankrupts the small startup before they even get a seat at the table.
The regulation is just a tool they use to raise the blind and strangle competition. They literally write the rules to build the fence.
Yeah.
And it perfectly frames the author's reference to the Smashing Pumpkins lyric. People always misquote the song, saying, "Despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a maze."
I've totally said that before.
Right. We misremember it because a maze implies a puzzle. A maze suggests a meritocracy where... you know, if you just work hard enough and take the right paths, you will eventually find the cheese.
But that's not the lyric.
No, the actual lyric is, "Despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage."
Just let that land for a second. A cage means the game is fundamentally rigged from the start.
Mm-hmm.
We feel trapped because we literally are. And that brings us to, honestly, the most jarring revelation in the text.
That we are all born into captivity.
Yeah. It sounds incredibly bleak on the surface, but the chapter actually pivots this into an empowering philosophy.
Well, think about how we raise children. We put them in cribs, we set up playpens, we install baby gates on the stairs, and we lock the chemical cabinets.
It's a very nice, very loving jail.
Exactly. But the purpose of that childhood captivity is not malicious. It functions like a wildlife rehabilitation center. The objective is to keep you from killing yourself long enough to teach you the skills you need to eventually be free.
The tragedy, though, is that most people simply transition from the playpen to the classroom and then directly to the cubicle. They never actually leave the wildlife rehab center.
They stay tame.
Right. And as a lifestyle design strategist, my entire focus is helping people orchestrate that exit. The chapter offers a foundational bonus law for your professional life to get this started. It says, to move up in professional life, move over and move often.
Meaning, don't just sit there.
Exactly. Yeah. When you hit a ceiling, when you stop learning or stop increasing your earning potential, you do not sit in the pasture and stagnate. You find a new ranch with a larger paddock. You leverage your current captivity to gather resources for the next jump.
It is all about intentional lifestyle design. The text uses this great analogy from The Simpsons, actually.
Oh, I love this part.
Yeah, where Homer manages to pay off all his debt and joyfully quits his miserable job at the nuclear plant to become a pin monkey at the bowling alley.
Because he lowered his overhead.
Right. By drastically lowering his cost of living, he finds happiness doing something low stress. Now, while the author notes this is an option, his preferred route is a bit different.
Yeah, more proactive.
Get exceptionally good at something you love, build a self-directed or online business around it, and ruthlessly drive your expenses down. The goal is to die wealthy, but not necessarily rich in the flashy consumerist sense.
But I need to caution you, the listener, right now. Because when you hear this, the immediate temptation is to march into your boss's office tomorrow, tell them exactly what you think of the system, and quit on the spot.
Do not do that.
Do not do that. The chapter explicitly warns against jumping from the frying pan into the fryer. Reckless action will just get you rounded back up by financial necessity. You really must plan your escape.
Because freedom is not one single dramatic leap. It is achieved in layers. Imagine you are that pig in a tiny 1/20th of an acre pen. You find a weakness, you push through the wire, and you break out.
But you're not totally free yet.
Exactly. You just broke into a 1-acre pasture. You have vastly more room to operate, but you are still inside a system. So you scout the perimeter of that 1-acre pasture, find the weak point, and breach it to get into a 5-acre section.
Then 100 acres.
You keep testing boundaries and expanding your territory until you finally hit the total wilderness.
And to execute that layered breakout, the chapter provides a highly specific, actionable formula. It's called the HERD method. H-E-R-D.
Ironically, the acronym is all about breaking out of the herd.
Exactly. Let's walk through the steps. So the H stands for habits, specifically breaking the mold. You have to identify the comforts keeping you compliant.
Like the steady paycheck.
Right, the paycheck that just barely covers your bills.
Yeah.
Or the title at a job you merely tolerate, the television you watch to numb the boredom. You have to question why you do what you do.
And if your answer is, well, that's just what people do.
Then you have identified a painted cattle guard on the road. You must build new habits optimized for acquiring freedom rather than habits optimized for being a good employee.
Next is E for escape. This is where you actively plot the breakout. You scout the perimeter of your life for weaknesses.
Right.
What are the skills you currently have that you can monetize directly to a consumer? What side hustle can you build on nights and weekends? You have to embrace risk, fully understanding that staying inside the wire, relying on a single corporate income stream, is actually the ultimate risk.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
You design the breach with a concrete to-do list.
Mm.
Remember, you act with the calculating intelligence of a pig, not the blind, stampeding panic of a cow.
Right. And after you breach, you hit R for reversion. This is often the hardest part because resisting the pull of the past requires immense psychological fortitude.
Oh, absolutely.
The moment you break out, the rancher will try to drag you back. But in human society, the rancher isn't a guy on a horse. It is your well-meaning friends, your family, and your own internal self-doubt.
Yeah, they will tell you that leaving a secure job is crazy. They will highlight every possible way your side hustle could fail.
Because they want you back in the pen. Your escape highlights their complacency. You have to acknowledge that their fear is their reality, not yours.
Right. You cannot rejoin the herd just to make the cows feel comfortable about their choice to stay inside the wire. And that leads to the final step, D for design.
Creating your own pasture.
Exactly. Define what your personal wilderness looks like, build your own system, and refuse to settle. Once you are out, you just do pig things without caring for a single second what the cows think about you.
But defining that wilderness is a deeply personal task. The author uses a fantastic analogy here.
The sunset, right.
Yeah. Imagine you and I are standing shoulder to shoulder looking at a beautiful sunset over the horizon. Even though we are looking at the exact same sky, our individual eyes and brains will process the light, the hues, and the shadows in a totally unique way.
So your sunset is physically different from my sunset.
Exactly. If I cannot even see a sunset exactly the way you do, I absolutely cannot define what freedom looks like for you. Your wilderness might be 5 acres off-grid raising chickens.
Or it might be running a highly automated digital business from a laptop in a high-rise apartment.
Right. You have to do the internal work to define it.
So as we distill all this theory, data, and methodology into a final review for you to take away, remember that dangerous freedom is always a better choice than comfortable captivity.
Always.
The overarching system wants to domesticate you. It wants you to be the cow, terrified of the painted lines on the road. You must choose to be the feral human, be the pig.
Realize that true freedom happens in layers.
Yep. And use whatever time you currently have inside the wire strictly as a training ground for your planned escape.
The author locks this entire philosophy in with three lines of mental code. These are commands you must continuously run in the background of your mind. Here is the first one. Computer, while I am inside the wire, find me every opportunity to learn skills that will aid me once I escape.
Right. And the second one is, computer, I want to get outside the wire. Find me opportunities to improve my situation in life. Find me breaks in the wire.
And the final one. Computer, always seek long-term game over short-term comfort.
Those three codes are the operating system of the feral human. And if you want to explore these frameworks and laws further, you can find a wealth of resources from the author at jackslaws.com.
Everything we've discussed today comes back to recognizing the systems of control. We highly recommend visiting jackslaws.com to continue that education.
The fences are artificial. The gates are open if you know how to look for them. The only question left for you is, which wire in your life are you going to test tomorrow?